What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support, and again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Podcast.
What is good, everyone? Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Formula One Podcast, your new favorite Formula One podcast, your favorite Formula One podcaster's favorite Formula One podcast. We're back with a two-man show this week. And we have a burning question for everybody out there. Is the spectacle that seems to be becoming the new norm worth it for the sport of Formula One? Or is it hurting the sport? Because I got to say, like, Miami is about as big a spectacle as I can possibly imagine happening around a race weekend. And that's kind of crazy considering Formula One races in Vegas now. But just things we've been thinking about as we watch the build up for this week. Todd, what's good, man? How you doing?
Well, like Rebecca Black, it's Friday. The weekend's almost here. And so I'm excited. I'm excited about the spectacle. I'm excited about the race. I'm excited to be talking to you about F1.
Yeah, man, me too. I think the spectacle in a lot of ways is super exciting. The thing that probably stands out the most in like what I've seen so far is the V-carb or Racing Bulls livery with the pink, the Miami theme. Like, I feel like that is like a special livery done properly,
right?
So it has a wow factor to it.
It's so funny that we have like the two, like the antithesis of that too with the Ferrari livery. And like when we talk about like special liveries, for anybody that hasn't seen it that's listening that might see it later this weekend or is going to listen to this later today, the car is fully pink, and like the only logo I think that on the car that isn't pink or white is the Hugo Boss logo, which boo on them for not letting them change the color of the logos for the one race. But yeah, that is exactly the problem with the Ferrari car. Ferrari can't get out of their own way, and it's like half red and half blue and white when they already had like the blue and white. It just is like, actually shout out to Trevor in the Discord. He put it pretty perfectly that it's logos. It's a logo infection that's slowly taking over the car. That's what the Ferrari car looks like, which is a perfect way to put it because they have no idea what they're doing. Not only with special liveries, because they never have, but like just the way to make it look good. I mean, I know McLaren's also had some pretty bad ones, but that one is especially bad. Their race suits look like sailor outfits.
Yeah, I'm less offended by the race suits because, like, the, you know, race suits kind of, that's, they, as much as I agree, they kind of look like sailor outfit, they also look very like traditional racing in a sense, just not for Ferrari, right? Like, you could picture a lot of teams having a very similar suit in years prior. Like, again, going back to the Racing Bulls, like, they've got like the pink suits, you know, like they kind of nailed it. Although I have to say, like, there was a Puma event that was like, you know, a football event. Like, actually, Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton are playing foosball at it against each other. It was really cool. And I didn't realize the F1 Academy, the women's races, the suits for those with the, like the, like claw marks or whatever, are fire. I don't know if you saw those, but they are super dope. And I wish there was more of that, like experimental stuff for the race suits for the rest of Formula One.
Yeah, it is pretty bland. But like, even going back to the Ferrari suit, like if you want to make it look special, just swap the colors. Like if you're going to lean into the whole HP blue suit, blue logo thing,
yeah,
one, turn the car blue for a race. It's not going to kill anybody. And two, like if you're going to go with just the special race suit, like make the race suit blue, make the logos white. Like it just looked so generic. Like, you're right, it looked like classic racing suit, but it just looked like a generic suit of a team, not just not Ferrari, right?
Yeah, it's like they did it with, was that last year that they did the yellow suits for Leclerc and Sainz?
I think that was 2 years ago, But that they,
that was cool though. Like, it was, I mean, it's still safe in the Ferrari world because it's like the Ferrari logo being yellow and with the Italian flag. But I do agree. Like, they just need to. I mean, look, I've dealt with this in the sneaker world for 20 years, but it's like the people that have been there, like fighting to hold on to the tradition for all those years, and like the disconnect between like the highest ups in a company and like the kids that are excited to watch Lewis race in Formula One, that if they were given a very special and unique livery for Miami, they would become fans of Ferrari on such a level down the road. Like, I have posters in my room, in my garage, from cars that were the, you know, the art cars that were done for Flying Lizard. Like, part of what makes me a huge fan, even though they're not even racing Porsches anymore to that level, at least, it's like what drew me in was like the creativity that came from those early teams that they had and like the experimental stuff that they did and the excitement that they brought. And I think it's a huge missing piece for Ferrari right now. And I don't know if we talked about this in a previous episode, but like, is the Ferrari brand strong enough to bring in that next, those next generations, right? Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know if it has the, like, the racing. Obviously, Ferrari is a huge brand, and it, like, it has still, like, a global presence, right? But it doesn't have, like, the racing cachet it once did. Like, before, it, 20 years ago, it felt like, oh, yeah, Ferrari. And it's, I guess it might still be a little bit this way, but it was way stronger back in the day. It was like Ferrari was like intrinsic to Formula One. And we know that it still is because we're diehard fans of it. But
yeah,
I don't think the random global audience, the average viewer, thinks about it that way. If anything, they think of Mercedes as that now, or Red Bull, because they've been so successful as of late.
Well, but that's the interesting thing. On the flip side of that, like, Puma did, you know, like leather Speed Cats with like clear outsole, like kind of like this ice blue, ice green, clear outsole for this weekend. And that stuff, and even some of the t-shirts that they did, like that stuff is like what I would love to see connected to the car. Like, there's a disconnect between like those products. And by all accounts, like, you know, they're like, that's one of the more popular shoes right now. The Speed Cat kind of is like having a moment, let's say, in the sneaker world. And to have like the, like, it's one thing to be like, okay, well, we make red Speed Cats that go along with the car, right? Like, it's a traditional color, and then Ferrari has its traditional livery. But like, to do the cool thing on the shoes is super dope for one aspect of this sport and the community that is into sneakers and the community that's diehard, that's going to go out there and buy the new thing and kind of collect. And I'm leading into like what you were asking before we started recording about like the hype around the races. We're seeing the product side of it live up to what we would expect in the sneaker world or like the streetwear world, where like there's a lot of cool energy happening. There's a lot of good collaborations coming together. And that part of it seems to be figured out. But like, that also needs to be connected to the car, in my opinion, or the livery, or even the helmets. You know, the guys need to have like a storyline that connects between all these different aspects of the weekend, because we're now looking at 3-4 days worth of media exposure and racing. And, you know, like, it's as much as like, you know, you being the diehard is like, yeah, Miami kind of is like, the race itself kind of sucks sometimes. It's like a spectacle that once tied it all together, you bring in new people to the sport. And I think new people to the fans, to the fan base of a particular brand, a particular team, a particular driver, because let's be honest, like, even if you took your kid to the races right now, he's not going to want to sit there for a 2-hour race. He's going to have like, you know, a half hour worth of, you know, attention to pay to the race itself. And then he's going to be like, let's go check out what else is going on here. Or at least I assume, like, that's how my nephews are.
Yeah, 100%. I took him to Monster Trucks, took him to Monster Jam in the Shark Tank, and got him great seats. Got him loaded up with sugar. I'm like, here, have a whole bag of M&Ms. Like, go crazy. Don't tell your mom. After like 30, maybe 45 minutes, he's like, can we go? And I'm like, there's a full-size monster truck 20 feet from you, and you don't care about this. Like, 8-year-old me is screaming internally right now. But that's the point. You're right. They don't have a thing where they're tying the spectacle and the action on track together. Right. Yeah. Like, you kind of just mentioned like the cool like collaboration stuff. Like, Lando just did a really good job doing that collab with Liberty Walk.
Yeah.
Where he went, he actually got a car, which is crazy. He went and got an R32. But like, he had a special helmet tied to it. They had a very cool promotional stuff tied to it. They had a cool video of him like doing an event at Liberty Walk, but like, it ended there, right? It didn't tie to I guess it tied to the track in a sense, because Lando had the special helmet.
Well, and he drove it to the track, but like, that's as close as you can get, right? Like,
yeah. But then, well, I mean, Suzuka wasn't a bad race, but like, it didn't, like, kind of peaked, and it's more bastardized in the American races. Unfortunately, we can't do anything right. But like, Miami, like you mentioned in the beginning, like, it's even crazier somehow than the Vegas race, which is just pure American excess. Miami just feels, I don't know, like, it's all spectacle and not about racing in any way. And long term, that doesn't bring people in to F1. They get interested from the spectacle aspect of it, or whatever celebrity is there doing whatever. But that doesn't interest them in the actual like form of racing, Formula One, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking about all week, was like, is F1 going through a bit of a like identity crisis, trying to make it so much about the spectacle? Every weekend is the Super Bowl, and that just doesn't work for long-term fandom, at least in my opinion. Maybe I'm off base here. You can't have every football game, like you kind of mentioned again in the pre-show, if every football game was a 4 or 5 day event, football wouldn't have the long-term fans. It's the buildup. It's the, you have to care about the sport in general, but then it has to build up to something, instead of F1 being every week is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy, because on one hand, I think that they can. Obviously, if the racing is exciting, then you're going to have fans of the sport. But I think F1 is also kind of its own unique sport, in the sense that you don't have to be like a diehard fan of a particular team. Let's say, like, I don't have to be a Ferrari fan to want to buy a pair of Ferrari shoes or a Ferrari t-shirt from the weekend. Right. Where like football, you kind of need to be a fan. Like, if you're not a Chiefs fan or an Eagles fan last year, you're not really, you might go if it's like a bucket list thing for you and you're a diehard football fan, but you're not buying anything connected to either of those teams. You might buy a generic t-shirt that says, I was there, you know, like, it's got the logo or whatever for the year. But I do think that Formula One, the missing piece to Formula One is the connection to like real life cars, you know, like, I've said this before, I probably sound like a broken record to some of our listeners, but it's like, if I'm a Honda fan and I go to Miami this weekend, I'm probably buying Racing Bulls merch to support Honda, because it's one of the brands that I love, but it would be a unique piece to get something from this weekend. Same thing with like the Ferrari stuff. If you're a diehard Ferrari fan, you know, there's going to be stuff for you to take home and remember this weekend. But you might not connect that mentally or emotionally to the race if the race is, you know, a DRS train. And I think that's the issue that they're running into, where we were talking about before we started recording, the Vegas race, by all accounts, everyone we knew, us included, were like, this is going to be a shit show. And this is going to be the dumbest spectacle on earth. And yet, both Las Vegas races have been pretty good. And definitely better than any of us expected it to be, because we thought it would just be this crazy. And, you know, like, they iron out things year by year, right? The tracks change a little bit. The car ride in Vegas the first year, where it's like, okay, we watch these guys drive for 10 minutes to get from the end of the race to the podium and like the, you know, ceremony. like that stuff is like the forced spectacle, right? I think like there's always going to be elements of the forced spectacle, the fake harbor, the fake yacht, you know, the fake like in Miami. And then like obviously having this, you know, you mentioned the F1 movie coming out and having like a fake garage there is like another layer of like, okay, well, this spectacle is just like, it's so big to get people outside of the sport that really have no interest in it, but maybe they like Brad Pitt. So now they're going to watch Formula One because they went and watched a movie. And now the trickle down of that is, you know, 30% of the people that go watch the movie that weren't F1 fans might go either to a race or watch races in 2026 and 2027.
Yeah, but like, I totally get what you're saying there. And I agree that Formula One is unique in that it kind of has to be a spectacle. Every weekend has to be a spectacle because for like just the bottom line that racing is so friggin' expensive. So they need all these sponsors in there doing all these activations, spending millions of dollars just to support the fact that these teams can go racing. But like that doesn't work. Like you can't, can you really outdo yourself with the spectacle every time? It used to be, and this is just me being old, but like there was a few races a year that were the spectacle races, right? Like COTA was one of them when it first came on. Monaco's obviously always been. It's just like billionaires and excess and plastic surgery everywhere, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, Kimi saying F it and walking onto a yacht, like that kind of spectacle excess. But like the rest of the races, like you wouldn't really think of like Shanghai or Turkey or the Red Bull Ring. Like those were just like races on the calendar. And granted, they're big events, but they weren't like spectacle events. And now we're approaching this where every race is like a spectacle event. Like Suzuka, we already had, like, that's always been a great crowd and very passionate, but they had all this extra stuff going on, it felt like, this year. And they're trying to turn in every week into that Super Bowl event. And again, I just go back to, if the product's not connecting on track, we have these, like, I think we've had one good Miami race so far since it's come onto the calendar. And I'm not talking about the one where McLaren won. That wasn't it. But like
Lando's first win, actually.
Right? Oh, that was Lando's first win. Yeah. That was, yeah. Not last year or the year before. I don't remember. But not like it hasn't been, the product hasn't really connected. And I feel like we've had that more often. And it I kind of think I said it in the pre-show, but like it's leaning back to the 2017, 2018 years of when the regulations had been there several years and they'd been kind of maxed out. And we were just getting these DRS train races with like Lewis and Valtteri, you know, effed off out front by 20, 30 seconds. And now we're getting, it's a lot closer, granted, but it's just not much action on track. They need to mix up the formula, which I think they're actually doing this weekend. They're bringing a full step softer tire compound to the races, which hopefully changes some tire strategy.
So yeah, Lando's first win was just last year, 2024.
That's crazy. It feels longer ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely feels longer. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on a lot of levels with this idea, but I also, thinking about it from a marketing perspective and like my work, I think like it's like if this is someone's first experience at a Formula One event, at a Formula One race, like it has to feel like the Super Bowl for them. You know, like I am against some of the stuff, you know, the fake harbor, you know, vinyl stickers to make it seem like you're in the harbor, that kind of stuff. It's like, if you want to be like Monaco and the city needs to step up and let them race near the water, like, don't fake it. Like that seems forced. But then you have like these, you know, private events and all of these things where I saw Tiesto is performing for like a private, whatever group, club, I don't know what it's called, but like, that's nuts. Like you won't ever get to see someone like Tiesto perform for a few hundred, a couple thousand people. Like it just not, that's just not normal in that world. Right. So there's a level of excess for that, like that draws people in. And I don't know that those people necessarily become fans of Formula One, but I do think they become, they become consumers of Formula One as an entity and buy a bunch of merch from, you know, like if they're Ferrari drivers or whatever, they're going to buy their, you know, Ferrari Puma Speed Cats and whatnot. But like, I think that's the other part of like where we're headed with this, right? Like, sneakers to me has always been the best place for hype. They figured it out. The industry figured it out well before anything else. And like, yes, you could look at maybe Supreme and some of the other like streetwear brands that kind of also figured it out around the same time. But like, really, sneakers as an entity is a great way to learn about marketing that you can apply to everything else. Formula One, in my opinion, needs more of that, in the sense that they need more of the levels of consumerism that exist for the sneaker world. Like, we can get all excited about an undefeated four, and then we can go buy like a undefeated four colorway of some other shoe and feel like we got something cool that maybe tells that story for us personally. With Formula One, you don't necessarily have like the whole gamut of products. You know, like, don't get me wrong, they make tons of products and you can buy merch for every team everywhere, but like, they haven't mastered the like getting the, you know, getting the product to stand out from the spectacle that happens over the weekend or whatever. And I think that's like one of the things that they need to figure out, because that's what's going to bring people along for the ride casually and turn them into fans once their team, driver, you know, brand, whatever, becomes more successful. We're kind of in this weird place where, you know, like you said before we started recording, we've had one good race out of six that was like really entertaining. The rest of the races have been kind of just going through the motions. Oscar's been out front in three of them and hasn't really lost any momentum in any of those. There was never really a thought that he wouldn't be winning. So like, you can't keep people's attention unless you're a super fan, not a super fan, but unless you're like already a fan of the sport and you're like, hey, I'm invested, I watch this every weekend or every race. You know, those people are not, that's us, right? You don't have to tempt us with a good time for Formula One, right? It's like, we're going to be there regardless. And I think that's the part that's like, how do you keep us entertained, but how do you keep, you know, the people that don't have an interest in it, other than when it's in their city, or other than when it's connected to something that they're connected to, or, you know, whatever those things are. But I don't know, man. I saw some stat, and I can't remember where I saw this. Might have been Kim Illman, who's a great person to follow if you're a Formula One fan. I think he said that the Miami Grand Prix brings in $500 million worth of revenue for the city of Miami over the weekend, which in that regard, I think everything should be a Super Bowl presentation, right? Like, it's, you know, like the levels of, you know, money that come in and like, not even just like the richness of it, but like the levels of excitement that brings to an area, you know. Like, I'm also completely biased, you know, like being here in Monterey and like knowing Car Week just means so much to people. And like, you have people here in Monterey that absolutely hate Car Week, but like, it means so much to the people that live here and like live around this area. Like, you know, it's like a time where you can just be, you feel like you're involved in it, even if you're not spending money to go participate in anything. And that's really exciting from a local, you know, local perspective, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think I agree with you. One thing that you said, said there, like, they need to have levels of that interaction. And I feel like the one thing that Formula One does not do well is, like, and they've started to do even worse at a lot of tracks, is pricing most people out of the experience in any way, shape, or form. I remember when Miami was coming onto the calendar for the year, that was a lot of the people's complaints. And I think the same thing with Vegas, is that, like, the locals there are going to have to deal with all the BS that the race weekend brings in to Miami, but they won't be able to go enjoy it themselves because, you know, the cheapest ticket was $3,000 or something. And that's, the average person just can't afford that. That's like a more like me or you bucket list item. Like, this is a once in a lifetime experience. We're diehard race fans. I'm willing to spend $3,000 on a ticket to go watch this weekend. Not a fan yet, but I'm interested. I want to go check this out. Let's spend a couple hundred bucks to go. And Formula One needs to find a way to still serve that high class audience and make that have that Super Bowl spectacle, but also let the, hey, I kind of saw, you know, my wife or my husband watching this program on Netflix and it kind of piqued my interest and I'm down to go check out a race. Like, where's that audience, right? So like, but again, going back to the overarching point, how do they connect all of that spectacle to the track? So it's not about, oh, I spent $90 on this shirt at a race that's way overpriced, but how does that connect me to like, oh, I kind of want to see like, oh, we saw this guy, Charles Leclerc, win this weekend. I wonder who's going to win next weekend. I want to find out. Let's watch that. Right. Like they need to do a better job of connecting those dots. Otherwise, this is just feels very much like a venture capitalist, which, I mean, it's ironic that a giant venture capital firm, Liberty Media bought F1. Yeah. Hopefully it's not one of those like, you know, pump and dump schemes with F1.
Toys R Us, where they sell all the property from out from underneath the business and lose everything in 2 years.
Yes, yes.
It doesn't feel like it's that extreme, thankfully, at least right now. But I think there's, you know, Liberty's done some good things, you know, like Drive to Survive is obviously a huge win for the sport. Liberty being, you know, behind that and behind, you know, this F1 movie. I think those things are wins, but I do think that a lot of the growth that comes from that as like diehard, longtime diehard fans feels like it's taking away from the sport, right? Like, but I agree with you on the idea of like having levels to the ticket prices and like letting people have access that, you know, that aren't going to spend tens of thousands of dollars for a ticket. I don't know if there's like a reasonable solution for that. Like in sports car racing, for instance, you know, if you want to watch, you know, Porsche Cup cars, you show up on Saturday and watch them, or you show up early on Sunday or whatever. Like there's support races throughout the weekend that are going to be cheaper, you know, like there's going to be more things to experience that aren't necessarily the race itself. But that's kind of like a hard thing to do when like outside of, you know, the F1 Academy, you know, like you're really there for the race. You're there for qualifying in the race on Sunday, right? Like those are the two things. Like, you know, you and I would go for practice both days. We would just live at the track for 4 days straight. But like the average consumer is like, I'm going to go for one of these things and experience it. But I probably don't have the energy or excitement to like push through like this long ass weekend. And that's kind of another part of this where I think the merchandise helps to kind of bridge those gaps. But also like some of the things that happen around the weekend, you know, I was thinking about like what I was saying earlier about the Puma event with like Charles and Lewis Hamilton. Like we would absolutely want to be a part of something like that and attend something like that just to see, you know, the product, the jerseys on, or the jerseys, the race suits on display, the you know, foosball table, like all that stuff would be entertaining to us, but we would go to the race. I think a lot of people probably go to these like extra events and then don't even go to the race. But I don't think that the money, you know, I don't think like the dollar amount that you spend to do that represents the hierarchy that we're talking about in like the spend, right? Like it's one thing if I can pay, you know, $30 to go see like, I don't know, like, you know, George and Lewis, you know, talk in an interview, or, you know, Lewis and Charles playing foosball against each other, I'd probably do that. But like, am I going to spend, you know, $300, $500, $800, $1,800 for like a partial ticket or whatever, like a 1 day pass? Like, probably not, you know, like I'd rather see the race and then you're priced out because the race is going to be way more expensive. So
but it's definitely a
problem. Like, I think they need to fall.
Sorry to cut you off, but you said it earlier, they could do a better job of, they have other series throughout the weekend. They have Porsche Super Cup, granted not at every race. They have the F1 Academy, they have F3, they have F2. If they scheduled it out so that there was another race or, you know, an F2 race or a F1 Academy race on a Friday. So you could see Friday practice for F1. You could see an F2 race. You could see F2 qualifying or F1 Academy qualifying or something where there's a few different things and you're only spending $300 to get in for that day, but you still get to see the other spectacle that is F1, all the banners and the merch stuff and the setups and the fake F1 movie garage and maybe the F1 fan zone you get to see with the Williams boys talk on stage. Like, you could pick out a few things. You still get the kind of the F1 life, for lack of a better term, surrounding like what feels like that spectacle. And maybe you go home and watch the race on Sunday, but they don't. They don't do that. So it's either you buy a single day ticket and you get what you get. Like, it's probably just free practice for F1 and that's it. Or like you buy a race day ticket and you spend $2,500 or something like that. Like, whatever it is now.
Well, I think the other part of that is like you have F2 and F3, you have the Academy, but like only, like this weekend is only F1 Academy, right? Like no F2, no F3. So like problem there is like it's twofold. It's if you did the whole weekend, right? These, you know, F2 and F3 are a significant amount of racing, the same way Formula One over 3 days is a significant amount, 4 days is a significant amount of racing. If you had all four of those stacked, especially for Miami, Miami is kind of a bad example. Like, so it's a bad place for just traffic, right? Like, by all accounts, it's like kind of a pain to get in and out of the whole experience. It's not like, you know, if you go to, Coda is spread out a little bit more, I think. And I think you have ways of getting in and out. But like, again, like the American tracks that they race at are not set up for like a broader experience because they're trying to monetize every person that has access to the track on one hand. But I think that if they did more, let's say they did a weekend where you have all four, you know, races happening or all four, you know, levels of racing happening, the traffic, the in and out traffic, the just like the bottlenecks that will be created from it would just make it a terrible experience for most people. Because if you didn't show up at, you know, 6-7 in the morning before everything gets chaotic, you're probably going to sit in traffic for hours to take that one or two highways into the venue area. And then it's just a terrible experience for everyone. So I think like they have to back off a little bit in certain places, but like they also just don't do a good job of promoting those other races, right? Like, I can't remember the last time I saw something. You know, we talk about it regularly and I see it on YouTube when I'm scrolling through to catch up on things. But like, it's not very often that you hear people talking about, you know, F2, F3, or even the F1 Academy, right? Like, I know that, I forget her name, Chloe, the F1 Academy is like, let me look it up because I have it here somewhere. I'm pretty sure the American girl is, you know, like, I think she's podiumed already two or three times. She hasn't won a race this year, but it's like, that's like a connection to the young girls out there that could become fans of Formula One. Like, why are we not seeing her like on the pedestal to like really make her, you know, I know you can't commit to one driver as the face of a sport, but like when you're in that driver's kind of hometown, I think she's from Florida, like that's, now's the time to lean in. Like if you're, you know, like that's the thing that like,
is it Logan Sargent in drag? Sorry. I had to make the joke. He's from Florida.
But like, I mean, yeah, anyway. That's the kind of stuff where I think there's like just a lot of misses, you know, like, and you know, maybe it's harder to get people's attention when, you know, a Lewis Hamilton is in Miami and, you know, like he's a global star kind of, like, I guess like that part of it is always going to be a battle for the marketing teams to get in front of. Cause also like, you know, again, they're trying to sell merchandise and they're trying to sell, you know, experiences. And like, it's just, everybody's like hey, there's $500 million in money coming in. Let's get some of it from some of these people, kind of is the attitude. But I also understand, like, if you have a business and you know that people are in town to spend money, like, you want to be around it. You know, you want to be around the energy. You want to be around the people that are willing to spend money, because especially now, like, our economy, it's like, I don't see like, you know, it going in the right direction for Formula One being so expensive. But, you know, who knows? Maybe I'm just biased.
But they could, like, going back to, like, the point, and you said, like, not every racing series attends every weekend, which is a great point. But one thing I think, like, IndyCar does well, I went to watch IndyCar Laguna, not last year, I think, but the year before. They didn't have a support series necessarily, but they had basically a track day within the weekend. And then they had, like, a grassroots racing league also attend, where they always had some sort of on-track action, whether it be classics or that, like, grassroots racing league, or like the people that just paid to be there at a track day. And granted, it's not the same level of spectacle, but they could do something like that. There's motorsports fans on some level for different types of cars and stuff everywhere, all over the country, all over the world. They could do things like that to, like, give us some on-track action. So I can only attend, you know, I can only go there to attend FP1. But, like, I also saw some, like, crazy drift dudes or whatever on track, like, They could do a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah,
that's a perfect example. Because, like, you know, the Grand Prix of Long Beach on the sports car side.
Formula Drift.
They do Formula Drift with it. I ran like a 10K. Like, they do like a marathon, half marathon, marathon for the weekend, too. So, like, leading into it, you've got those types of people that are going to show up for it. Like, and it becomes a whole thing, right? Like, they used to do the... they used to do the celebrity racing, you know, like all the Toyota Celicas and the Scions and stuff. So that's the kind of stuff I think, you know, I hope that Formula One evolves to those types of things. But also, like, I don't know, like, I know we're talking about Formula One as a show on this podcast, but sports car racing is, you know, they don't have the spectacles. They don't have the spectacle, I should say. Some people do wear glasses. So, they don't have the spectacle that is Formula One, but they do have the, like, diversity across all of the different, you know, experiences. And I think that's an interesting kind of, you know, it's an interesting kind of, like, two-sided approach to, like, the most premier motorsports racing in the world. And I haven't been to, like, a rally, a World Rally Challenge event, but or championship event, but, like, I feel like those types of things are kind of the other side of it, where, like, it doesn't cost a ton to go watch it, because you can literally just show up on the side of the road. But, like, you know, it's not in your face. You're not going to see, you know, I'll say this now, but they'll probably make one, but you're not going to see, like, a Drive to Survive WRC, you know, show. But, you know, that would bring people in, and next thing you know, you would have the same kind of, like, choice to make of, like, okay, are we making this, you know, a spectacle, or are we making this about the race itself? Because it's really hard for it to be both, unless, of course, you're Las Vegas and you somehow hit the jackpot.
Nah, I don't know. it really only works for, like, that kind of racing series, right? Shout out to rally fans, though. Like, I've been to a couple, like, recent or, like, local rally type events, and the people that get up at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning to go stand outside on, like, the side of a dirt road in the middle of nowhere to see, like, cars buzz by for, like, a second.
Yeah.
That's just so hardcore. Like, it's awesome because you have no idea what is happening otherwise in the race. But just to see, you know, a Subaru sideways at 90 miles an hour through the trees, that's awesome.
That's I've been to Pikes Peak Hill Climb, I think, twice. And, like, that's basically the experience. Like, you're up at 2-3 in the morning to get up the hill. You can't come down until the race is over because it's one road. And that you have no idea, because you like, don't have reception on the hill. You don't have any way to see, like, unless you're, like, positioned in, like, one of the places where you can see a scoreboard or something. But, like, you're also not going to move that whole time. So, like, you have to, like, pack for a day sitting on the mountain and watching cars all day. And it's an insane experience, and I think everybody should try it at least once, but also it's an insane experience.
Yeah. Very much.
So what's your favorite thing about Miami this year that you've seen so far? And, you know, like, whether it's liveries, or I can't even say livery without thinking about the Ferrari livery, but, like, I do think that there's, I saw George had a new suit and a new helmet with Mercedes with some pink on it.
I want to talk about that real quick because that's weirdly my favorite thing. So if you haven't seen it, Mercedes did special race suits for this weekend, which is branching out. And it does, I don't think it's really necessarily tied to anything, but I think it's maybe somewhat of the creative Adidas culture sneaking in there because they have that new Adidas partnership and it has very prominent Adidas branding on the race suits. But they're wild looking. And I'm not going to say they're good or bad necessarily. Like I don't like feel about them one way or the other, but I think it's cool that Mercedes, which was traditionally more like Ferrari and kind of a stick in the mud when they did special livery stuff, they were a little bit more like, oh, we'll put a splash of paint on the wing. That's like, that's our special livery. It seems like there might be loosening up and they have some pretty wild looking race suits for this weekend. So
yeah,
that's my favorite thing I've seen so far. Obviously the V-carb racing bulls, whatever you want to call them, that livery is awesome. The whole car is pink.
Yeah. Yep.
It looks really good.
Did you see the Mercedes, F1 Academy? What's her name?
I'm not familiar with any of the drivers except for the McLaren girls and then Leah, like Ken Block's daughter.
Okay. So I think it's, I'm going to botch it. I think it's Dorian Penn is the Mercedes driver. That car, they actually did a livery for that car for Miami. And it kind of looks like it could have been tied to George, to the F1 team. Like it's close. But again, like I think, you know, I hope that Adidas is pushing for a little bit of energy around this stuff, because as much as like, I think part of, like we talked about before we started recording, I think part of it is like doing a livery for every race seems crazy, but also like, why not at this point, you know, like make it unique, make it to where people feel like it's kind of like sneakers, right? Like make it feel like people want to collect the season or something, you know, like I might want a shirt from, you know, if I'm a McLaren fan, do I want a shirt from every location? If it's different and unique, maybe so. If it's the same kind of thing and it's like, oh, there's a Texas patch for Coda, or there's, you know, a flamingo for Miami, or whatever those kind of cheesy choices that are made across the board, you don't have any interest in that kind of stuff. But when they go all in and commit to it, I feel like it's kind of like the Racing Bulls, like those cars. I mean, if I could get, you know, I know Yuki's not driving for them, but like those cars to me are still like, Yuki's still connected to them. So it's like, oh, if I wanted to buy like a Miami, you know, Racing Bulls t-shirt from this weekend, it looks better than it normally does, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think the coolest thing for me just really is like the, you know, probably the stuff that you don't like, all of the spectacle that happens around it. You know, like I'm not optimistic that the race is going to be great. You know, we kind of, I don't want to say we know, but like you can kind of predict that this race is not going to be anything interesting, maybe, but who knows? Maybe we have, you know, like that's the wild card of Formula One is what keeps you on your toes, right? So maybe we do have like an interesting race finally, and I won't be talking about the spectacle around everything. I think it's interesting that they're bringing in like, you know, the brands like with, you know, like I keep talking about the same thing, but like seeing that, like the kind of like experiential, like Puma thing that happened with Ferrari, it gives you an option to look at something from Ferrari that's really cool versus the livery that most people, us included, are not a fan of. Right. And I think that just needs to happen more, and then eventually connect that back to, you know, back to the car, right? Like get that, like whatever that speed cat is on the car, and now you have a through line for the entire weekend for all the brands that work with Ferrari versus just like, cool, we threw some new HP stickers on here kind of mentality with delivery.
We spilt more blue paint on the car.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that Racing Bulls livery though, I mean, I'm just every time one of the teams does the pink, it's good. Like it looks good on a race car.
Yeah, it really does.
I don't know how to explain it other than that. So I'm kind of curious to see like if those things can, you know, push the rest of the teams to do more stuff. I do wonder if like the cost, you know, like if the team isn't a team that sells merch or sells enough merch, is it is it worth the investment or the time and energy to put a new livery on a car? And how frequently do you do it, right? Because like, that's the beauty of Red Bull and anything connected to Red Bull, whether it's Racing Bulls or Red Bull proper. Like, you know, the energy of Red Bull is connected to the entire experience throughout. So like, if you're buying something that has any of those brands on it or any of the drivers, you feel connected because you're like also drinking a Red Bull tomorrow after the races or whatever that is, you know?
Yeah, I think they can do a better job of connecting the right brands to the right teams to keep that energy, like you're saying. But they also need to do like the right price point, right? I've been like kind of turned off with F1 merch as like as much of a diehard fan as I am, because like I ordered a McLaren, I think it was last year, one of the McLaren team kits.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like $90, and it was like not even it was a jersey like you would get as a giveaway at a minor league baseball game. So it was like a thin nylon.
Yeah. Yep.
Like super crappy material. And you're spending $90. Like, honestly, the F1 drivers themselves have better merch on a personal level at this point. So they just have to have the right price point, the right quality product, and that will connect itself.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I know I'm a broken record on this episode, but like I just sent you the Ferrari special edition hoodie with Puma. It's super fire, but it's the white collection, right? It's a part of that white collection. If they did the cars in all white, then now all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm buying this because the car also matches. Like there was that one moment that Ferrari put out an all white car, and now I have something to memorialize and remember that. And I'm going to go back to it years in the future, and I'm going to wear it to other Formula One events. I think that's like such a huge miss for the team. Cause like, look, if I had that, you know, like, I'm not sure what the price is on that hoodie, but like, I know it's going to be expensive for Formula One. I know that we make exceptions for these kind of things when we're at the experience, but like, that hoodie is super dope. Like, it would be something that I would buy outside of Formula One, even without the Formula One connection, at the right price point, obviously. But like, that to me is just like the shining star of like, wow, the merch was done right. The team forgot that they should be supporting the merch somehow, kind of in a sense, like with the car and the livery. But I also think that's like we're kind of spoiled with the sneaker stuff because
they do it really well.
Yeah, we know that we're going to get a colorway of a shoe, and then we're going to get a shirt that has some tie into it or a story that's connected to it. And like the shoe being like the pinnacle of it for sneakerheads versus the car supposed to be the pinnacle of the storyline on track, and then it not being, there's a disconnect there. But
think about it, if you do it right, and this is like ties into like the Cars and Kicks episode plug. That you guys were talking about with the Jordan 4, the Undefeated Force.
Yeah.
We're still talking about that shoe 20 years later, and there's been so much merch that Undefeated has done since in that same vein of a colorway. Let's think about like classic iconic liveries.
Yeah.
The Pink Pig, right?
Yep.
That was done like amazing livery. It's still talked about all this time later and has been referenced in all sorts of different pop culture stuff. Like, yeah. if McLaren, think about the Monza thing. I think we talked about it already, but the Monza car from 2 years ago when they did the special yellow livery or yellow race suits and like small yellow bits on the car. Imagine if Ferrari did an all yellow Ferrari for that race. I'd still be talking about it because that had the potential to be so sick. And I probably would have bought merch for that. Just like, screw the price point, like an all yellow Ferrari car for that race was so memorable, like, or if they did it, and it would have been like a thing all this year later and drawing me in as a Ferrari fan. But alas, they can't get out of their own way. But that shirt that you sent me is $139, so
yes, the hoodie, yeah, I mean, definitely pretty pricey, but if you're going to
if you can connect that to an all white Ferrari on track,
I'm buying it. Yeah. Yep. 100%. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's, I feel like that's the disconnect. The one thing I was going to say, you know, we were talking about kind of, or I was talking about the connection to the kids and like the next generations that come up as Formula One fans and how they can kind of draw people in. One thing that I, you know, you mentioned Ferrari not being winning, you know, or as popular maybe as they once were. I think that like they're popular as like a, as like a lifestyle brand. They're just not popular as a racing, like, I don't know what their sales look like on the, you know, car side, but I feel like they're less popular in the car world than they have been in quite a while. And like, we're kind of moving out of the Lamborghini era. Like, I feel like McLaren is like the trendiest car right now. Like, for a while there, like, you know, four or five years back, every young person with money was buying a Lamborghini. And Lamborghini doesn't have any kind of, you know, there's spec racing with Lamborghinis and they race in the sports car stuff, but like, they didn't have like a connection to I think the culture, the car culture in a lot of ways for a number of years. They felt disconnected. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, this is the trendy car. Now everybody's buying Lamborghinis and hardly anybody's buying Ferraris for like car culture, right? Like, there's an older generation that's always going to collect, kind of like the way old, you know, like Porsche collectors are, where it's like, the new whatever's come out, I'm going to go get one, where I already ordered my next one for, you know, 2027. But I think that's another interesting piece to the puzzle of like, how do these brands connect back with like the average consumer outside of the merch and outside of like the, you know, I think maybe Red Bull has an advantage because like, you know, if I'm 15, I might not have any money for merch for a race, but I might feel connected because I have a $3 can of Red Bull that makes me feel like I'm connected to the sport. It's interesting to me that there haven't been more of those decisions made based on just the access points that we talked about. You know, like, there's so many brand names on all these cars. There's so many brand names on all these suits, you know, like obviously Monsters on Lando's helmet or whatever, but like, or, you know, Lewis or whomever, like, I can't remember all the energy drinks, but it's like, that to me seems like an opportunity for a brand or maybe even just the team to be like, yeah, we make Ferrari water. Like, I don't know, like a $2 bottle of water is a $2 bottle of water. If it has a Ferrari logo on it, then maybe it's worth three, you know, like I'd probably pay it just to try it, you know, like
rich energy.
Yeah, rich energy, like that kind of stuff is like they could create their own hype in a sense. Like, they could create their own product that created the hype that then became this massive wave of fans for years to come. And I think that's like a really interesting and missing piece for a lot of the teams.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think about brands like Liquid Death. Like, why isn't that on a car?
Yeah,
or someone or associated with some driver? Like, I like that brand anyway. Like, they just make products that I like, but like, if they did like a special edition Vegas Liquid Death something merch, that I would be like, I'm in. Like, that's,
yeah.
But there's so many possibilities on a micro level like that, like a can of Red Bull, a can of Monster, that they don't do well now, except for the maybe just those two.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. All right, you got any predictions for the race?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a bit of a chaotic race. I haven't actually looked at the weather, but that step softer tires, I think, is going to cause problems. We might see some qualifying on mediums because it's a hot boy out there right now. So predictions, I'll go. I think we're going to have a slight shakeup in the sense that we'll have probably Max on top. He likes this race a lot. Lando P2, Oscar P3, maybe a George P3. Sneaking in, Oscar, keep the driver's race interesting.
I'm going to stick with the same guys, but I'm going to say that Lando is going to go number one. This is going to be his first back-to-back win in his career. And I think Max is going to be P2, Oscar P3. I would love to see Lewis up there, potentially like P3, P4, but that's where I'm at.
I mean, it sounds like there's some positivity coming out of Lewis's side of the garage, so we'll see this weekend.
Yeah, if not, you know, like, we're all voting for Brad Pitt, right? Isn't he? I'm sure.
I believe you mean Sonny from the upcoming movie.
Oh yeah, Sonny.
F1. Couldn't they give it a better name? Just they called it F1. Like,
I don't know, man. I don't know. Let us know what you would name this movie in the comments. Leave us a review. We appreciate y'all rocking with us for another episode. This is a fun one, and I'm hoping that Rohit will be back next week. I'm sure he will be, but he's just, what do they call it? He's out on assignment or something like that. Isn't that what they call broadcasters when they don't show up for their job? Not that he didn't show up. Anyway, thanks for watching, listening. Catch you in the next one. Hey, actually, I'll say all that. I'm rambling. If you want to watch the videos, join the Patreon. It'll be linked in the description. We're just going to put them on Patreon from now on, and you can see clips on social and on YouTube. And that's it. Peace.